Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast with your host, James Creviston.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Clean Comedy Podcast. It's James. And today I have an amazing guest for you guys. I am a fan of this guy. I actually you ever see somebody on TV and you go, I know them from somewhere. Like, I saw his Dry Bar special before I actually knew who he was and like what he had been on and where I'd seen him before. So it was like weird for me. I was like, wait, I know that guy. So I had to go back and like do the IMDb game that everybody does. I don't know if you guys do that, but he's an international headliner. He's worked with Sinbad, Jerry Seinfeld, Rodney Dangerfield. You guys know, one of my favorites, Jeff Foxworthy, as well as headline clubs all over and colleges all over America and Canada. He's best known for his series regular role as Big Mike on the NBC series Chuck. And he's completed production on Adult Swim's Black Jesus, which is a great show if you guys have never seen it. He's been on Pure Flix, Malibu Dan, The Family Man. He can be seen on Disney Channel's original TV movie Life is Rough. He's had guest appearances on Lab Rats, Good Luck Charlie, Heroes, Weeds, My Name is Earl. Again, another place I saw him from. Grounded for Life, Crossing Jordan, and Amazing America with Sarah Palin. And he has released a hilarious talk show called Pure Comedy, which is on Pure Flix, which he also hosts. And you've probably seen him in The Pursuit of Happiness, The Island, Garfield, Terminator 2, Cooties, like so many things. And his Dry Bar special, which is where I first saw him. And like, again, it did not compute for a minute. It's called Queen Out of Compton, which is hilarious. And he was also nominated for a Daytime Emmy in 2021, which is also a big deal. Like, that's, I mean, a very talented person. So please welcome Mark Christopher Lawrence. Welcome, sir. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, man. I'm just laughing because I think you have an old bio.
Do I?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, there's on PureFlix right now, we have Fragment Oblivion, which is a series. Also, Nothing is Impossible. The series I'm a lead in. We got two Christmas films coming out this year. One is called Lying Together. One is called Bringing Back Christmas. And I'm the lead in Bringing Back Christmas and the third lead in Lying Together.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a little different.
I could have literally gone down your IMDb, though, but we would have been here for like an hour of like just me reading off stuff. So I was like, I'm just going to pick things that I know and like put that out there.
Well, I was laughing about the like IMDb, for example. I started before there was internet, so some of the stuff that I've done is not on IMDb because the producers never put it on there. Maybe they're out of the industry or gone. And when I look at it, I'm like, you'll say my very first thing is on there, which is Hill Street Blues. That was the very first TV thing I did.
Nice.
But there's a lot of stuff that came after that that's not on there at all.
Wow. Yeah. Now, what's funny is, it's like when you really, when you see somebody, you don't realize who they are. So I saw you on Dry Bar. I'm a big fan of Dry Bar. One of my best friends, Jenna Kim Jones, is one of the first people to also do Dry Bar and stuff. So I like really, really like liked it. You did a show recently, I believe it was in Moor Park, with my buddy David Studebaker, who's also on Dry Bar. So like we have like all these weird connections. And I was like, I know him from somewhere. Like, you know, you just look at, you're like, I know him. Why do I know that person? So I had to go do the IMDb game. And I was like, oh, yeah. And I used to watch, like, Good Luck Charlie and Lab Rats with my kids.
Oh, yeah.
So I'd seen you before. And I'd only watched Chuck a few times. But I was like, oh, that makes sense. So it's really interesting. Now, you have had a long career. How long have you been doing stand-up? Like,
I started doing stand-up in 1981.
Wow.
I was in high school. I was in the 11th grade.
Wow. And where did that start at? Like, how was it, a talent show? Was it just like, how did
my first time on stage was at the Comedy Store in Hollywood. And I was supposed to be on, you know, yeah, I went down and signed up for potluck, is what they call it. And I was supposed to be on at about 10 o'clock. And Robin Williams comes in and does like an hour in front of two people in front of me. So I ended up getting on at like midnight, but I was so happy that that there were two people in front of me that had to die before I had to come on. And by the time I got on, it was all comics in the room.
I can imagine that after Robin Williams, it's just like you're like, all right, well, I can't follow that, so I'm just gonna do the best that I can, you know.
Well, you know, it's like I didn't really even have an act then. I went up and talked about my day at school, and I came off stage, and Louis Anderson said, "Hey, kid, you got something there. Keep writing." And I was like, writing?
Wow. That would be amazing to, like, have Louis Anderson, like, say that. Wow, that's amazing. So then, did you catch the bug at that point? Were you coming back, like, every week and going to open mics, or, like, how'd it work?
I started doing, a friend of mine, well, let me preface it by saying my 10th grade English teacher, I guess she was my 11th grade English teacher as well. She introduced me to a guy, Perry Brents, who was a former student. He was at USC and was producing shows called Evening of Soul. And so he put me on one of those. And that was the next thing that I did. And then I started doing open mics. And then when my friend Lennon and I, we were doing like a team for a while. And then I went to college. And then in college, I started dabbling again. You know, doing open mics whenever they showed up. Like me and a good friend who's very funny, Lester Berry. We would go and do these open mics that were like with singers and dancers, and so we'd go, okay, no matter how we win, if we win like first and third, we'll just split the money down the middle. And so most of the time we were first and second, and then we went to this one club one night. And this guy who turned out to be Dancing Barry, who dances around in the stands at the Laker game, he won. And it was like, I think the first prize was $500. And so we were like, got beat by a dancer. but we split second and third, so we just split the money down the middle.
That's an amazing way to hustle and make money. It's harder now as a comedian, I think, than ever to make money in comedy. When you're starting out, like, there's not a lot of places that want to pay. There's not a lot of places that you can go and kind of get that money. It used to be easier to go on the road and get money and stuff. Now it's just not the same.
Well, here in San Diego, you know, San Diego is one of the burgeoning sort of comedy meccas. You know, there's five full-time comedy clubs here and tons of one-nighters. And most of the one-nighters, they do like, they pass the hat. And so young comics are getting something, and you know, they're not, you know, just working for free all the time. So it's a little better in that sense. But yeah, back in the old days, you know, I used to open for a lot of people, and there was a club called the Laugh Stop, and you know, they would do Thursday, three shows Friday, three shows Saturday, two shows Sunday. And so that's where I kind of cut my teeth, really. It's like I was working a lot there as a host and, you know, writing new material. And then I'd end up, you know, a headliner would take me out on the road with them. And so that was, you know, a time when people were more friendly to each other. It's like the headliners wanted to see you do well, so they would help you. You know, like I'd go on the road with guys, and like Jack Marion, for example, he would watch my act, you know, before I went on, you know, when I went on in front of him and write notes. And I come off stage, okay, I got a bunch of tags that Jack Marion wrote for me. Yeah. And most of the headliners I worked with were like that. now it's like these younger comics, they're so cutthroat. It's like they don't help each other, and as a result, you know, the guys that are doing well don't reach back and grab somebody. So, you know, things are a little different now.
No, yeah. I went on the road with Darren Carter, and after every show, after every night that we do, we go have dinner. It was dinner. Well, I say dinner, but it's like midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. Okay. So right, I say dinner. Right. I say
early it, breakfast. Really,
yeah. Yeah. And then we would talk and he would give me notes and feedback on the set that we did or whatever. And then the next night when we did a show, he would say, "Hey, you did great. You used that tag or you did this thing or whatever. Now you need to do X, Y, and Z." And I would record all those on my phone so I could like make sure I was go back to my room and just work on stuff and then go to sleep. And the next day work, you know, get ready to do that. And it was the best experience because I jumped leaps and bounds in a small amount of time because somebody was willing to say, "Okay, here's what you do now." And like, I am forever grateful to him for that. But I agree. There's a lot of headliners who say there's only enough room for me. There's only enough time for me. Right. There's only enough stage for me. So I'm not going to help somebody else up, you know? And it's,
right.
And I feel like it's hurting comedy because, yeah, it's become a competitive game as opposed to there's only so many of us. There's not a lot of comedians in the world. We should all be friendly to each other. We should all be lifting each other up. I look at it as like,
and especially on the clean side.
Especially on the queen side. Now there is less competition on the queen side. I do see a lot more hands up and helping each other on the queen side than I do in just standard like comedy club world and stuff. So, you know, I've been blessed and I try to bless people when I can to be able to do a show. Like if I get a call and say, "Hey, do you want to do this thing?" I'll say, "Hey, I can't, but I know somebody who can." And then I will hand that off. Right. I always try to like pay it forward or give it to somebody else, because I know that other people need help too. And like, I'm not the guy who goes, "It's all for me." Like, "Oh, they only care about what I want. They want me, 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 me." I'm not a me, me, me person. And I think I tie it back to being a military veteran, growing up around the military and growing up around that stuff. If you help the people that you can, you help who you can, if you can help them. Now I know San Diego's, I miss San Diego. I lived in San Diego for 4 years when I was in the Navy. So I do miss San Diego. When I was there, though, there was very small comedy scene. The comedy scene was – there was, I think, Madhouse Comedy Club and I think –
Comedy Palace.
I think – yeah, maybe the Comedy Palace. This was –
Comedy
this was,
Store in La Jolla.
Yeah, the Comedy Store in La Jolla. Yeah, this is like early 2000s. So, yeah, it was only those. There wasn't the American Comedy Company. There wasn't a couple of other places.
There wasn't American Comedy Company. There wasn't Mic Drop. There wasn't – well, Drop took over the Comedy Palace space.
Okay.
And there wasn't the Laugh Factory.
Yeah, there was the Laugh Factory.
Would do an occasional show over in Coronado at the Del.
Oh, wow. The Hotel Del. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I do want to come back down to San Diego and do shows. Like, I really love San Diego, and I would love to spend, like, a week there doing shows. It's like my old stomping ground. So I like love San Diego, and it has like a good vibe to it. Like it's not LA where it feels like rushed and hurried and you have to do this. It feels like more calm. Like one of my friends, Lisa Gilbert, is down there and she does comedy. She's amazing.
Generally, if I'm going to church, Lisa's my first choice to take with me.
There you go. She should be. She's amazing. She's actually one of my wife's favorites. My wife goes, "I love her so much." And I'm like, "All right, calm down. Like, you should say that about me. Don't say Lisa first. Say me, you know?"
Hilarious.
So
hilarious. Where are you now?
I'm outside LA. So I'm riding outside LA. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I wish I'd have known, because I can put you on some stuff that I do.
Well, you and I can talk after the show. Now, what's your favorite part of your comedy career? Like, what was the point where you knew things were changing for you? Where like you got more comfortable on stage, you kind of got your voice, you kind of knew who you were. How long did that take, and what was that process for you?
Once I left college, I went up to San Francisco and did a show with the San Francisco Mime Troupe for the summer. And when the summer was over, I did the San Francisco comedy competition. Okay. And I made it to semifinals, and I didn't have an act at that point. I was just winging it. And I was like, okay, I can do this. And then so I went home and started doing these 5-minute sets on this cable access show called Dare You to Laugh. Wow. And the lady who was producing that, she said, "Hey, Mark, I'm going to produce a show in Tacoma at my hometown at the Regal Theater, and I want you to go." I said, "Okay, cool." So she puts all these comics in the van, and we go to Tacoma. And on the way, she goes, oh, so by the way, Speedy can't make it. So I'm going to need you to do 30 minutes. And I didn't know I had 30 minutes. So I took a business card and wrote all my little 5-minute sets on the back of this business card. And just kept looking at it, you know, because we get there a day early. I just kept looking at it. Then I get on stage and I do 37 minutes.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, so now I have an act. Now it's time to like fine tune it. And so I started working on it, and I'd have people, you know, watch me and, you know, friends that I trusted. And then, you know, different headliners would give me input, you know, as I worked with them. And so it was probably within a year of meeting Jack Marion. And I can't tell you what year that was. I don't remember. But I worked in Vegas. Bob Zaney had a bunch of rooms. One of his rooms was Rodney's place, Rodney Dangerfield's room. And so he booked that. And so he booked me there as an opener. And the first time I was there, it was Jimmy McGee, Tish Ward, and me. And then and the marquee said, Jimmy McGee. And then breakfast special, $1.99. Mark Christopher Lawrence.
That's so Vegas, funny. Dude. It's so Vegas.
So funny. And then the next time I went back is when I met Jack. And so Jack and I hit it off, and he was like, hey, I'm going to Canada to do a show. And I'm working for this guy. He has like 31 one-nighters. He says, but we should go and do, you know, like 2 weeks or 2.5 weeks or so. So we did 18 of those gigs. And wow. A couple of them were two nights. But while we were up there, I really caught my legs while we were doing that show. So like it really put some steam into my act. And, you know, plus he was giving me notes every night and, you know, helping me get stronger. And then by the end of the 18 shows, he said to the guy that hired us, he says, hey, when you bring Mark back, you should headline him. He's hard to follow.
Wow. That is a nice thing to say, because that doesn't happen very often where anyone will give you that boost. Now, you mentioned something about like a mime troupe. You had kind of glossed over that. Was that like real mimes? Like mime?
No,
mime
no. San Francisco mime troupe. Okay. They do Commedia dell'arte, which is, you know, the Italian style theater, which is very, very large. You know, Marceau sort of takes, you know, as a comic, it was invaluable in that it helps you to get real big if you need to, and then bring it back. I remember working with them all summer, and then my first audition in Hollywood after that, the casting director said to me, what have you been doing all summer? I said, I work with the San Francisco Mime Troupe. She says, oh, okay. She says, bring it way down. Because I guess I was playing the comedy really big. You have to doing Commedia all summer.
So it's like acting, but also like stand up as well, or is like a like
no, it's I mean it's theater. It's like okay. You know they do the mime troupe is famous for doing political humor.
Okay.
The show I did was called Ripped Van Winkle. Oh. The guy goes to sleep in 68 and wakes up in 88.
Okay.
And then all the things that were in the news in 88, you know, they wrote into the show. They figured out a way to write it into the show. Wow. And it was really, really cool to work with them.
That sounds awesome. And so did that make you start wanting to act more, or did you already want to be an actor? And that just
no,
kind
I was
of
already working
legs?
As an actor. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I went to USC on a debate scholarship, and then first year, I took a voice class for speaking and centering and got talked into auditioning for the acting program there.
Okay.
And it's a 4-year program. And so I get in. And so the next year I'm a junior, you know, because I transferred. And so so at this point, it's like, okay, they said, well, we're going to put you in as a sophomore because there's 3 spaces there. So me and Tommy Ford from Martin. And this young lady, Sabina Weber, we got those 3 spots in that class. They have 30 men and 30 women that stay together all 4 years. Wow. And they had 3 drop out. Jonathan Silverman was one who dropped out because he did Bright Beach Memoirs. But so that year, that same year, I started working professionally as an actor. One of my debate coaches brought an agent to see me in a play, and she signed me. You know, a couple of days later, I went to her office and she signed me, and wow. then sent me out for my first audition for TV, which is Hill Street Blues, and I got the job. And then, you know, every month something was coming up. I was getting jobs, you know, until I graduated. And then I did the show with the Mime Troupe, and you know, things just snowballed, you know.
That's amazing. That is so wonderful. Now, would you recommend comedians take acting classes or improv or sketch or any of those things like that? Do you think that helps stand-up comedians, or do you think it hurts them? What do you?
I think it helps. I think if you're a comedian and you want to be an actor, then you should definitely get some training, because there's a lot of comedians that get opportunities as actors and they're terrible. And then there's a lot of actors that try to be comedians and they're terrible. I just have to be good at both.
Yeah, that's true.
But I think for me anyway, improv. I took an improv class with Michael Chang, and he teaches you to write on your feet. It's not the same theater games that most improv companies do, but it's all about character and letting the character do the work. Like when you have a well-rounded character, the character will talk for itself. Right. And several times I've been on stage and one of my characters just pops out and starts talking. You know, and it's usually based on something somebody in the audience says, and the character just goes to work, you know, which is really cool. I don't know if you know Paul Ogata.
I do know Paul Ogata. I know of him. I have not met him. I have watched a ton of his stuff. I'm a fan of his. I have not got to talk to him. Yeah, no.
I watch him and he makes me feel like, why have I called myself a comic? I'm not a comic.
100%. You watch him and go, oh my gosh. Yeah.
So we were doing improv in this workshop, you know, for about 4 years together. And it was the same thing in that workshop. It was like his mind was so quick, but you know, the same thing. It's like sometimes I'll see him post a clip and I'll see like one of the characters that he did in the class that pops out of his mouth on stage.
Wow. I love watching his clips because I just go, he's so fast. He's got them. You're like,
step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
Like, what am I even doing with my life? This guy is amazing. And like, how's he not? Also, I always wonder, like, how's he not more well-known? How's he not like a household name? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever.
It makes zero sense that he is not a major comedic star.
100%. It's so weird because I know a ton of people who know him, and like other comedians are like, he's fantastic, he's amazing, he's one of the best. And I'm like, how is this guy like not have a Netflix deal? How is he not known everywhere? How are we not seeing him on everything? Like, he should be everywhere. And he's so funny. And I assume he's an actor as well. I assume he would be a great lead on some kind of sitcom just because his style is so fun. And you would want to watch that every week. It would be like the TGIF back in the day of ABC, where you want to watch this series from this comedian every day, you know, every week.
Yeah, my friend Rusty Cundiff and I were pitching a show, and he is the first name on the list to be the friend.
Good, yeah.
You know, because he's so good. It's like I said, look, man, I said we just write the scene. He'll make it better.
Yeah. Now you've done Dry Bar and stuff like that, and you also work on PureFlix, which are they competing? I think they're competing companies, aren't they? Like PureFlix and Dry Bar.
Dry Bar is not doing scripted material.
Oh yeah, but they're part of like VidAngel, which is like also does scripted programming and stuff too. Like the shows. Wow.
See, I've never seen any of VidAngel's VidAngel stuff, but Sony bought.
PureFlix.
Wow. So VidAngel can't compete with that.
Yeah, no. They're, but well, their show, The Chosen, is like one of the top shows right now. I see it everywhere like all over the place. It's like one of the
The Chosen is great.
Yeah. But, so it's
but
good.
Sony is about to kick it up a notch and yeah.
It is a market that is kind of lagging, that hasn't really been pushed well for clean, wholesome entertainment anymore. We've kind of lost those things. And so having streaming services that do that is fantastic. What was the process like of working with PureFlix and getting into that ecosystem and starting projects there and stuff?
I had worked with a makeup artist, actually. I did an appearance on the 700 Club.
Okay.
And she asked me if I knew David A.R. White, and I said, no. She said, oh, you should know him. She said, I'm going to do an introduction. And so on Twitter, she did an introduction in our inboxes. And he's like, oh, cool. And then about a month later, he says, hey, who's your representation? So I give him my representation. Then, you know, a couple of weeks later, you know, they made an offer for a job. It was The Encounter. And I did a thing with Morgan Fairchild.
Wow.
And it was really cool. It's like, so I remember getting to the hotel, I'm checking in, and she taps me on the shoulder. She goes, hey, Mark. And I turn around. I said, hey, how you doing? She goes, I'm Morgan. I said, I know who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she had done an arc on Chuck.
Yeah.
And so we had met before. We didn't actually work together on Chuck, but we had met a couple of times. And so all my stuff was with her. I played her butler. And that's it awesome. Was really a really good experience. And that was the first thing I did for them. And then David put me in Malibu Dan. First season of Malibu Dan, I did 4 episodes. Second season, I did 3 episodes. And then I think the last thing that I did for them was Nothing Is Impossible. And then I did Fragment Oblivion, which was through Kingdom Sight Productions. And that ended up at PureFlix.
Wow. I'm glad that there is more stuff like that coming out. That is really awesome. Now, you act, you do stand up. Do you write? Are you like a writer? Are you writing shows or trying to develop your own stuff as well?
Yeah, we're developing stuff. I have 3 people that I write with. You know, I'm good with story and initial idea. I'm terrible with dialogue. I always second guess it. So I just go to people that I know are good at it and say, hey, here's the idea. Let's see what we can come up with.
That's the thing that I work on the most is dialogue, because I hate like really can't either a campy dialogue or dialogue people would never say. Like I work on a lot of scripts with different people and stuff. I will punch up scripts or edit scripts or write scripts from scratch for people. And I have to get into the character to write their lines. Like I'll start thinking like the character and then be able to write their lines. And sometimes I'll talk it out and stuff.
And that's important because you know, different characters speak different ways. So a lawyer speaks like a lawyer, a truck driver speaks like a truck driver, you know, for example. And a lot of times it's like I'll read something and all the characters sound alike. And it's like, you know, there's no delineation in these characters. You got to figure out, you know, who's who. And I think the writing is the beginning of making a project great.
Agreed, 100%. And I always find that the funniest thing is when you read someone's script and they use all these big words, you're like, no one uses those in real life. And it sounds, and if you say it out loud, it sounds awkward and clunky and weird. You're like, you can't write like that. You have to write how people speak, which is in short, snappy dialogue. Nobody gives like a 5-minute monologue. You've never had a conversation with somebody where they talk for 5 minutes. And then someone at the end goes, okay, right.
There are those who do.
I have not met those people. Maybe I'm lucky in my life and not met those people. But like the 5-minute diatribes that you get in scripts where you go, no one does that. Like, or at least 99% of people I've ever met have never done that. So what is your what's your favorite kind of project? Like, do you like action stuff? Do you like more comedic stuff? Do you like more dramatic stuff? What's your kind of thing your go-to?
Well, I mean, I'm known for comedic stuff, but I think I'm a better dramatic actor than I am a comedic actor.
Really?
I work harder at the dramatic stuff. Comedy is kind of on the surface for me. It's like my instincts are very good, and so I play the comedy very well, and it's easy. the dramatic stuff, you know, you got to dig around and some stuff in your own life to get to where you need to be sometimes. And yeah, I work harder at it. And because of it, I think I'm a much better dramatic actor than I am a comedic actor.
That's interesting. I would suck at drama. Like I wrote a dramatic series that then we cut it up and now it's a dramatic film. It's a dramatic like action mm-hmm. film. And I was like, not comfortable. Like I literally told the producer and the director, I was like, look, I don't write drama stuff, man. Like I write comedy stuff. That's what I do. I can write action. It's fun, but I'm not a dramatic guy. They're like, no, we really believe in you. And so I wrote this series and now then they cut it up and they had me go back and we made it to a feature film. But yeah. It was the scariest experience of my life to write drama because that's not what I do. It's easy. Like you said, comedy's on the surface here. It can come out very easily. But drama was I remember sitting staring at the computer like to type and go, I don't know what to do here. Like, I don't know. This is I want to make it funny. And I would do that. I would sometimes make it funny. Mm-hmm. I can't do that. I got to go back. It's got to be we're supposed to be serious in this moment. And it was really hard for me to do that. Is there those moments when you're acting in the dramatic moment and you kind of want to make it a little more funny because it feels too intense or it feels too raw or whatever?
No, because I lean into like when it's intense, I lean into it. But there are moments where it's not one of those things where this is a very dramatic moment. Like in Bringing Back Christmas, there were moments where, you know, my character gets fired first day. And, you know, he's got to tell his wife, you know, I got fired. And I didn't get a raise. I was thinking we were going to get a raise and be able to do these things, take trips. And so, I mean, clearly that lent itself to very intense drama. But then there were moments with Lee Allen Baker. She was on Lab Rats. And she's really funny. There were moments with her where it would be a dramatic moment. And then we found humor in it. You know, between us, it's our chemistry was great. Sometimes when you're working, you know, it just lends itself. Like, for example, Pursuit of Happiness. You know, I went in and auditioned for the movie and left there, you know, feeling like, oh, I killed it. And told my agents, hey, I killed it. And sure enough, we get a call the same day. Oh, everybody loves him. Will's people were there. They love him. The director wasn't there. He was in Italy. He'll be back in 2 months and then we're going to bring him back for him. So I go back, I do exactly what I did first time around. And he was looking at me like I was an alien. He was like, and then he goes, hey, no. This is not a funny movie. That's not funny. I said, black people are going to laugh at that. I said, whether I play it straight or not, they're going to be laughing. So eventually I get hired. You know, I left there thinking I'm not getting this job. And then like a month or two later, I get the job. So I get hired and he had a party on Halloween. So I went to the house, they rented for him. And I'm there a little early. And he says, hey, I'm glad you're here early. He says, I want to talk to you. He says, you know, initially I didn't want to hire you. He says, because you were too funny and I didn't think this is a funny role. He says, but I knew that this part needed a rewrite and I didn't have time to do it. He says, but I'm so glad I hired you because you're bringing stuff to it that's not there. And you know, every take I try to get better and working with Will, he was the same way. He's like, all my scenes in that movie are with him. And every take he's trying to get better. And I think just from a dramatic standpoint, you know, the intensity comes out of really being in the character and letting the character do what it does. And my character just happened to be a little funny, you know? So sometimes like the first time you see him, you know, Will is trying to remember this phone number right. And I'm coming at him with, hey, did you see that game last night? It was 116 and 112. And then I'm throwing numbers at him. He says, hey, I can't think about numbers right now. And then he goes, you owe me money, $14. Yeah. I'll get that to you. And then he leaves like 14 is a number. Yeah. it's hilarious. It's like, it's so sometimes in a dramatic piece, it's okay to be funny. You know, I did a thing in 2020 for Tyler Perry. It was All the Queen's Men, a series called All the Queen's Men. And the producer said they hired me because they knew I could play this part. And you know, because it's intense, and they felt like I would bring a little funny to it. And sure enough, it lent itself to some fun.
So did you get to work with Tyler Perry? Like, you got to like work with him?
No. When I was there, he wasn't directing. He just produced. He didn't direct or act in it. And then he, after the fact, decided to add two episodes to it, and he directed those two. And I was like, dang it.
I know, man. So everyone watching, I'm going to put this in the universe. One of my dream goals is to work with Tyler Perry, to work on something with him, because I just think he's fantastic. He's one of the best. And I mean, I don't know what role he would have for me. Obviously, I'm not the right demographic usually for him.
That's not true. Have you seen that thing? What is it? Something about a president or something? You know, one of my manager's clients plays the president, and he's done every episode of that show.
Oh, so I won't pull off a president at all. So that's not going to. America would be terrible if I was a president. Just so everybody knows that. Never.
Hilarious.
Yeah, no, thank you. I'm the dumbest guy in America. It would be like Idiocracy. Like, I would still be the dumbest guy. You put me in the, it's not going to work for anybody. So don't do that. Don't do that. But I would love everything he does. Just sparks something in me, and he just like, I love this, and it feels so like genuine and real, and like it reminds me a lot of my childhood and a lot of growing up. So I love his stuff.
I was so impressed with the studio. I mean, I've worked probably every studio in the system. And when I got there, first of all, it was in the height of COVID. I mean, it was the end of 2020. They sent somebody to my house to test me for COVID the day after they hired me.
Wow.
And then 3 days before I flew out there, they sent somebody to test me again. And then they flew me on a private plane. When we get there, and which made me think, okay, I'm clearly not making enough money, because that is the way to fly if you got to fly. And you get there, and they pick you up, and all the other actors that are coming in, they pick you up, put you on a shuttle directly to the studio. You go into the garage, test again. Then they put you in your housing, which is on campus.
Yeah,
Because it's an old army base.
Yep.
And so they put you in your housing, and you stay and you share your house with one other person. Wow. And they say, stay in your room. If you go down to the kitchen, let the other person know that you're going down. We don't want you guys cross-contaminating each other if somebody's test comes back bad. And you wait 4 hours. And so during that 4 hours, we did a table read on Zoom. And then they opened up, once all the tests were back, they opened up camp. And you can go and come and go as you please, but you couldn't leave campus. If you left campus, you're done.
Yeah.
And it was really a great way to work. It's like you felt safe in the height of COVID, and you were there to work. And so literally, me and the gentleman that I shared the house with, we just worked on each other's scenes all day.
That's so cool.
I'd go do my workout and come back. We'd go to breakfast and then come back and work on each other's scenes. And so our scenes were killing, when we got out there. And he was a really good actor. He was the poet on Oz.
Oh, okay.
Craig Mums, I want to say Robinson was his last name, but he passed away shortly after we met. But just a really good actor. But that experience at Tyler Perry, if you get to work there, you're going to love it.
I would love to work there. I saw video. I think it was Will Smith going there, and they had the video of all the building that Tyler Perry built to replicate the White House and stuff. And it was, and I was like
80% scale.
Yeah, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Like, that's why I said, like, he's just amazing, and the fact that he's doing that in Georgia and stuff.
There's another house that he built that has four different entrances
that look
like different places. So if you had to shoot something and you needed four locations, you got them right there, which is really cool.
That is so amazing.
He's 12 sound stages.
He's a dream guest. Like for this as well. I know he's not a comedian, but he's added so much to the world of comedy through Madea and all the stuff that he did back in the day, and his growth and starting out in the Chitlin circuit and just like really doing all these things to really grow, to go from doing stage productions to one of the greatest directors and film guys in the world. I think he's like one of the richest too. So it's like, and he does it on his own. Like it's amazing.
Well, you know, when he first tried to get Madea produced, you know, nobody wanted to do it. So he spent his own money to do it.
Yep.
And then, you know, that really blew him up in terms of film. Yep. And then he just snowballed and, you know, now he's the head of a major studio.
Yeah, he's amazing. So what are your goals in 2023? What are the things that you want to accomplish? What things you have coming up? Are you going to do another special? Are you going to do like you have what's going on for you for 2023?
Well, I'm doing a clean comedy series that Mike dropped. So June 15th is our first one. Technically we've done two prior, but they finally gave me just a three dates in a row so that we can sort of get those things out there. So June 15th is the first one at Mike Drop Comedy Club. And you know, because of the writer's strike, you know, everything is kind of on hold right now. So the things that I had coming up, you know, are not really happening until the strike is over. So we'll see what happens. So now I'm just looking forward to, you know, the movies coming out at the end of the year, Lying Together and Bringing Back Christmas. In the meantime, working with another writer friend of mine, we have a project that we're raising funds for. So we're kind of waiting for the investment group to pull the trigger and then we can go shoot that. So just, you know, grinding, trying to get to the other side of the table. I mean, as an actor, it's like, it's great to do it, but then the longevity, I mean, I've had longevity as an actor, but now I want to get on the other side of the table, producing and directing side. And that's, I think 2020, that's what I'm trying to do more of.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I love to see that. That's great, man. I can't believe, congrats on the Mic Drop. That's the thing is we need more clean comedy in the world. It has to be out there. It's a hard thing to do. Like I was producing shows for a couple of years, you know, COVID shut that down and it just hasn't,
yeah.
I haven't been able to get back to it again. So I'm trying to figure out how to make that happen again. But it's one of my favorite things in the world to do, you know?
You know, I've been, since 2008, I've been doing a show called Tuesday Night Comics at North Coast Repertory Theater. And when COVID happened, we canceled we do six shows a season. So we just canceled one show at a time. And we were able to do the last show of that season. And then, so when we did the last show, you know, seats 194, we came back at about 169. And then we took a little dip the next show down to about 141, and then now we're back at full capacity, which really happened, you know, that following show after 141 we jumped back up to full house. And I'm doing the same thing at Laguna Playhouse, and I'm doing the same thing in Moore Park at High Street Arts Center.
Right out where I live.
Ah, you should come out. We're doing one Saturday night.
Yeah, you don't do it. Oh. We'll talk about it. I think I have two. I'm hosting two shows on Friday and Saturday this week. I want to. Maybe I'll drop by afterwards. What time does it run from? Do you know?
We start at 7:30. I'm usually back on the road by 10.
Okay. Well, I'll see if I can make it. Maybe I could slide out early after I host or hand off hosting due to somebody else and slide out. That happens sometimes. You can do that.
Hilarious.
Well, awesome. Where can people find you? Where can they find all your schedule for all the shows and everything that you do?
I post everything probably like a week in advance of the show on all my social media. Mark Christopher Lawrence is my Instagram. If you go to my website, markchristopherlawrence.com, scroll down to the bottom, you can see all of my bugs for the different platforms. And usually I post in one place and it goes everywhere. So,
perfect.
I'm easy to find. Mark Christopher Lawrence. Google.
That's awesome. Well, thank you, Mark, for being on the podcast. I'll put all that stuff in the show notes too, so everybody has all the links to everything, so they don't miss out. They'll have the Instagram handle. They'll have your website, all that stuff. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Please go like, subscribe. Go check out Mark's stuff. Go check out the YouTube video of this. So if you're listening on the audio, which I know thousands and thousands of you do, go over to YouTube and watch that more so we can keep those numbers going up. It's getting better every week, every month. So I appreciate every single one of you. I do this so that all of you can hear from people who have done the things we all want to do, accomplish all the things you want, and be able to learn. So I appreciate you. Thank you very much. Have a good one, and we'll talk to you soon, everybody. Bye.